This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The humanities are going to save the world. That's right. If you thought that subjects like philosophy and literature were just the province of students who don't want jobs, you're wrong. At least that's what Anat Beletsky thinks. She's a professor of philosophy at the University of Quinnipiac in Connecticut and Tel Aviv University in Israel. And she thinks one of the most important issues in the world today is human rights. And the disciplines that fall under the umbrella of the humanities are the proper place to explore them. She's speaking at the second annual Conference on Human Rights and the Humanities, sponsored by the National Humanities Center here at RTP. And she joins us now from Yale University. Anat Beletsky, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's talk about this conference. What's going to happen there? Why is it important?
Well, the conference is the second one in a series of three conferences at the National Humanities Center that are all devoted to the idea that humanities and human rights have something to say to each other. I was there last year at the first conference, so I can pretty much tell you what's going to happen at the second one if the format is going to be the same. We have a bunch of people from the humanities, and I'll tell you more about that in a second, but a bunch of people from the humanities discussing the question of how humanities and human rights go together. I think more importantly, how we can teach human rights in the humanities in universities. It's a pedagogically oriented conference in that we want to know what we want to do when we teach human rights
and
in the humanities.
And interestingly, I mean, when we think about human rights, we think of that as a sort of tactical, political, or strategic political question that, you know, politicians on the ground have to wrestle with. Why is it a subject for the academy?
Wow, I don't believe you said that it's politics all the way through. Human rights in general, before we even think about humanities, human rights is in some sense supposed to be apolitical. It's a universal thought that we've been dealing with basically since the Second World War, the whole idea of human rights. You are right that it usually goes through the legal perspectives. The people working on it in academia are either in law or in political science, policy departments, things like that. So the point of humanities, your question would actually be, why would English or history or philosophy have something to say about human rights? I really don't think it's just politics all the way down, but I do think that we have been marginalized, those of us who do something that is very, very theoretical, which is what the humanities are usually perceived as.
But when you talk about that, if it's not political, that means, as you suggest, and you raise this question, the fundamental question in an essay that you wrote called The Sacred and the Humane, where do human rights come from and what grounds them? And that suggests that there is some appeal to an objective authority from which the idea of human rights and its details will flow. And I wonder if that's not something negotiable in a political sphere, then unless you all have the same God, it's hard to know where those rights do come from.
Right. And I think that's the main question that I ask. I come from philosophy. I'm sure people in other disciplines ask the same question. But in philosophy, we ask where do human rights come from? And we ask that as a conceptual question. We ask it as an analytic, critical question. Who is the authority telling us that we have human rights? And that is, for me, a critical philosophical question. It's really interesting the way you've put it, that we then want to know about the authority on the ground, who's going to be in charge of human rights, who's going to be responsible for upholding them and respecting them rather than violating them, of course. I think the philosophical question would be, what is the conceptual idea behind human rights and why would we think that we as humans have human rights? You said the word God, and I think in that article, I'm not sure, but I think the article that you're talking about, what I said was that it's pretty easy, and I don't mean easy derogatorily. It's pretty easy to be religious and say, in fact, as I heard the speaker before me say, that we all have the same dignity as human rights because we were created by God. But if you don't have a God, or if you're not religious, or if you don't think the divine authority is the authority you're looking for, then you do have to give a good answer, or at least a sufficient answer, to why do we have human rights? And we study that in philosophy. And my hope is that the kind of answers, or definitely the kind of questions we ask in philosophy, will then make it more sensible for us on the ground when we do human rights, definitely in the university classroom when we teach human rights, to explain to students and to ourselves where human rights come from as a concept rather than literally a legal construct.
Where do you think this idea does come from?
Oh, you want to? I can't give the whole course here.
No, but you give the outline and the abstract, the idea. Because again, I think this is a fascinating question, and I think the questions you raise in this particular essay are brilliant. I mean, more blood has been spilt, right, over arguments about God and divine authority than probably any other question that humans have fought over. I think we can stipulate that and have no argument. On the other hand, if there is not some kind of overarching authority in which we all agree to, then doesn't it become kind of a negotiable question? Where does this come from? Well, we in Slovenia, we look at it this way, and we don't really buy the American democratic approach. Now what do we do?
Well, that was three questions in one.
Okay, you pick, pick one, your favorite.
Okay, no, just one thing. We all say that more blood has been spilled over religious wars. I'm not sure that's true when you take into consideration the 20th century. I mean, I don't know if Hitler and Stalin were waging religious wars.
Right.
But that being said, when I think of the real authority is the human being, and that is what humanism is. And that is why, again, this conference I find so important, this conference is so important, because we are saying that the human being is the source of authority. Humanism makes the human being the higher value, the highest value. And that, of course, leads immediately to what you said. Since human beings are different, since we do come from different cultures, since we do value different things, we have to negotiate on human rights. That makes them less absolute. I don't know if it makes them less universal. That's one of the questions that we struggle with all the time. And that's one of the questions that came up very vehemently in last year's conference, where the focus was on culture, on different cultures. And then the question is, if we think that the human being, whatever he or she is as one concept, if the human being is something that we can define and even characterize as having rights, essentially as having rights, then what do you do about different cultures thinking very differently about these rights? And that is exactly what we're trying to deal with. So you're right, it's very negotiable. It's not an absolute term, even though it is a universal term. So I make a difference here between being absolute and being universal.
Well, let me hold you to that then. What is the difference between absolute and universal? It does seem to me we'd have to come to a universal agreement before we could then move forward with the construct, how we're going to construct the rules for protecting these human rights, no?
Yeah. Yeah, so absolute is something that you can't argue about or you can't change in any way. And universal, I think universal is a dream. Universal is wanting to say, it's the aspiration of saying that we are all, no matter from where, no matter what kind, and no matter what gender, and no matter what religion or what political entity, we are all equally human and have the same human rights. Now, that is an axiom, I agree. But then once I've said it, I do have a lot of things to worry about. What you said sort of hinted at one authority deciding this. And at this point, on the ground again, we do have the UN and we do have international law. And that's why legal scholars are important and relevant to this. If I said before, and if it sounded like I don't want legal scholars or political scientists in this, I didn't mean that at all. I think that we can learn from what's going on in the legal arena. It's brilliant and it's very, very fascinating. But they have to struggle with the same kind of qualms that we do. We in the humanities might be pampered. We have the privilege of asking the questions more theoretically. And then people like me, but I think most people definitely at these conferences, then worry how you bring that academic sort of ivory tower discussion down to the real world. So, yes, we do talk with lawyers and legal scholars and politicians.
Well, I wonder how important it is even to come to some universal understanding. I mean, let's just look at it. Let me just pose this as a possibility and ask you what you think. Maybe we don't all have to agree, but we're going to negotiate as though this were a trade agreement. We all have different cultures. We all have different understandings about what a human is, who qualifies as human, and that's, believe it or not, even in the 21st century, still an argument in various parts of the world, even here in the United States. So let's say we're going to come to an agreement because, as in a global economy and a global world, we're going to have some rules about how we treat each other. Let's just make the rules, come up with an enforcement body, and whether our attitudes are in line with this set of rules is almost irrelevant. People who didn't agree with the Civil Rights Act had to obey once it was passed in the 60s. And so maybe that's what we're looking at. We don't have to come to universal agreement. We just have to make the rules.
Yes. The question is, who is the we that have to make the rules? And here we are on very slippery ground, because that we is usually whoever is in power. That we has traditionally been the Western world. And in fact, that's one of the main accusations against human rights, against even universal human rights, that they are a Western construct. That's why in this conference, for instance, we will be talking about what's going on in China. Do we think that human rights are violated in China, or do we think that we should just look at human rights differently when we talk about China? You've brought up the question, you didn't give it that name, of relativism. Are we willing to be relativists? In some conceptual sense, but still, as you said, agree to an international body or an international guidebook of telling us the rules and the laws. Again, I think this has been addressed in the law, in international law. When I ask about it in philosophy, when we tell stories about it, when we write stories about it, narratives in literature, even when we do historiography, we ask more questions than we give answers to. So you're trying to pin me down to things that are much more on the ground,
right.
And my answers there, sadly enough, come less from philosophy than from on-the-ground experience, where human rights do work. I mean, the community of human rights has been doing a lot of work, I think very good work, even though some of it has come up for all sorts of accusations and blame and faults about it being a more power struggle than a universal struggle. So you're pinpointing the exact problems that we have all the time.
Right. And I will now play Angel's advocate and say that is precisely in asking these kinds of questions and discussing them in forums like this and others that we can get to the tactical details in a much more intelligent and a broader framework that includes more people. So asking these questions is precisely spot on. That's the last of my Angel's advocate for the moment. let me ask you, because I know this is important for you, the idea of exploring democracy as a human right. And again, this is a Western concept. It's a powerful topic. Is democracy a human right, do you think?
Well, I think that question was actually not formulated correctly, because it all depends on how you define democracy before you ask if democracy is a human right. I studied in the United States in elementary school, and I remember being taught that democracy is majority rule. We've all gone way past that in defining democracy. Democracy for me is majority rule, but then of course respect for and guarding over human rights and minority rights. So in that sense, democracy is almost defined as human rights. And if you look at the United Nations, they have their own list of what democracy means, and it's all a list of human rights. So it's not that democracy is a human right, but that you can't even speak about democracy if you don't speak about human rights in the way I think of democracy.
So when we look around the world, starting here at the United States, where so many of those fundamental rights have been eroded, particularly over the last 12 years, And you can lose your right to vote. You can lose your right. You can lose your right to own a weapon in this country under certain circumstances. The fact is that's what your ability to call yourself a democracy in that definition is relative as well. Wouldn't you
say?
Oh
yes, very very much so. And I would say there's a continuum. There are places that are very undemocratic, and places that are bastions of democracy, and things in between. I come from Israel-Palestine, and everybody always touts Israel as the only democracy in the Middle East. And one of the main things that us human rightists are saying, we human rightists are saying, is that Israeli democracy is in danger because of the violation of human rights. So those two things are very, very connected.
When we think of the humanities, of course, philosophy, and that's the discipline you're coming from, but literature also plays an important role in expanding our understanding. And again, legal language can be contentious and very difficult to kind of negotiate, but the language of literature can be far more appealing and reach us in places where legal language often fails. Talk about the importance of literature in this conversation.
Oh, I wish I were a literature scholar. Let me just say that last year at the conference, what I got out of the talks that were given by people in literature, by the way, literature and film, of course, we did have some wonderful presentations about film, but basically the arts. And if I talk about literature and film, of course, I can always say Guernica and mention, Picasso. We get from the arts something that philosophy can never give us. I say this not as a traitor to philosophy, but as someone who understands that we can get to people through the arts, I think, even better than we do in philosophy or history, if we talk about humanities. I think of Coetzee's work, for instance, the South African author. I remember people, again, in Israel and in Palestine, quoting him and using his intuitions and insights to make us understand far better how or why human rights were being violated. So I can't talk as a literature professor. I can only talk actually as a consumer of literature and as a user of literature. When I give a talk to soldiers in Israel about human rights, if I quote a good author, if I quote a poem, I think I get to them much better than I do by analyzing the concept of human rights, which is what I do in a classroom.
Well, and it also points to the power and the value of a conference like this because it brings these disciplines together so that they can cross-pollinate and feed and nurture each other and then move forward out into that other part of the world. And so that brings me to my last question, which is whether or not we've even lost our appetite on the ground here on Main Street outside the academy for this kind of discourse to guide us in the kinds of democratic decisions that we have to make. Do we as people care about the conference that you're having?
Well, last year's conference was fascinating in that, on the one hand, we had the workshop based on people who are, call them experts for the moment. And on the other hand, the people who were listening, there were people from the community. I don't know the triangle well, but the hall was full of laymen, or at least academics in other disciplines, or even academics from humanities. The hall was full of people listening and asking questions and engaging in this kind of conversation. I don't have statistics about how many people do care about human rights and how many people do care about the humanities, but it's clear that it is a burning issue. So yes, the conversation is going on. And let me just say one small thing. Last year, the focus was on culture. This year, the focus is on the concept of state and state and human rights. So very naturally, we're getting more political scientists and legal scholars along with us. And in fact, the keynote address is going to be given by Michael Ignatieff, who is a person who has written about philosophy. He has an amazing book about Isaiah Berlin, but he was also head of the Liberal Party in Canada. So you see in one person this connection. And I, in the philosophy course that I teach his article called Human Rights, the Midlife Crisis. And he wrote that 15, 20 years ago. And I keep wondering, well, where would you say we are now? If 15 years ago we were in the midlife crisis, I hope we're not old and decrepit now, but rather, on the other hand, having a rebirth or at least doing things that we hadn't thought of before by bringing this into the humanities.
Anat, great pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anat Beletsky is a professor of philosophy at Quinnipiac University in Connecticut, Tel Aviv University in Israel. She's going to be speaking at the second annual Conference on Human Rights in the Humanities. The conference is this Thursday and Friday, and you can find out more at nationalhumanitiescenter.org. Just ahead, what life is like for the students with disabilities on college campuses. Stay tuned.